Good morning, fellow students. Welcome back to Legacy Weapon, your guide to the Legacy format. I am Jamie Keller.
And I'm Drew Walton.
We are here to help you, as always, get into the Legacy format and get better at it, learn more about the decks, learn more about the cards, and just have a good time. We are, as always, hosted on GatheringMagic.com and sponsored by CoolStuffInc.com. So, what is new with you, Drew?
You always ask me this question, and the answer is always the same, which is not very much.
You are a really boring guy.
I don't know why you agreed to host a podcast with me. I'm sure you could have found someone who, has more to say about the answer to that question.
Yes, but I need somebody who actually knows things about the decks. That's what you're here for.
There we go.
Well, we are trying something a little bit new this episode, and we want to hear what you all think. We are trying Legacy Weapon Unplugged. Hashtag awesome. That is not the official name. Please nobody ever call it that
now.
Again. We are seeing about different editing. We're trying to keep it a little bit more natural, a little bit less edited. And we're going to do a substantial difference for the next few episodes. See how we think it goes. See how you all think it goes. If this is terrible, you can tell me. I've got thick skin, or at least I will pretend to. And we will go back to what we were doing before. If this works, who knows? Maybe someday we go to every single week content? Maybe?
Yeah.
Who knows? So
exciting possibilities.
Anyway, keep that in mind, and please tell us if we suck too much.
you should tell us that anyway.
As a general rule, there's an appropriate amount of suckitude, and if we pass that point, somebody needs to call us out. We hope that you all enjoyed our previous episodes, the last two being the interview with Alex Kessler of the Masters of Modern podcast. As it turns out, first of all, the Eldrazi deck was really good.
It was a thing.
We were all right. It was a thing. And when I said, I hope one deck gets to the top eight... So six decks got into the top eight.
Yeah.
So we maybe undershot that a little bit, but
yeah, no. I was technically correct when I said that I didn't think the whole room would be playing it. Except during the top eight, pretty much the whole room was playing it. Cause it's the only deck that's good right now. Yeah.
So we will be keeping an eye on that, actually, and we'll be keeping an eye on it in Legacy, actually, because it is strong enough that people are testing it in Legacy, and it has not broken through. It's not yet a deck in Legacy, but I do know at least one guy who's testing a few of the cards to good effect. We'll keep you all posted.
Yeah.
I do have one other current event, actually. There was an announcement today, as of recording, that Legacy Leagues is coming to Magic Online. We mentioned that this was coming and in an undetermined date in the future, which apparently at the time nobody else had noticed that announcement, so I think that meant that we got an exclusive spoiler. But now it's actually official. It is on the Masters, is on the mothership. It is starting in 1 week from today, on the 17th. Which means that if you have internet
access, this podcast, there's an excellent chance that this is past news. It has already started.
Yes, that's probable. You now have a local meta. You now have a local Legacy scene that you can play whenever you want. This is wonderful for me in particular because family, job, baby. I very rarely have 5 hours to spare to play Magic straight. But, you know, I can find 30 to 45 minutes to play a match every here and there. So I'm signing up. I'm jumping in. And I'm very excited about it. So that's a thing. They're also doing a twice a month big tournament with some very excellent but top heavy prizes, by the way it looks. So go ahead and check that out. Maybe try out leagues first if you have not played Legacy or haven't played Magic Online before. But I think the prizes are like a Jace and a Snapcaster and five duels and a Caracas, and it just goes on and on. That's for first place. Like 30 cards or something ridiculous like that. So
those are things.
Yeah. Anyway, so that's current events. Let's get into today's topic. And today's topic is another deck. Last time we're doing one that neither of us play primarily, but that has been very popular lately and is blue, which we thought was important to kind of get your feet wet on a deck with Force of Will in it. Today, we're going to go in the opposite direction. What are we going to do today?
Today, we are going to talk about my baby, which is Maverick. This is not a blue deck. This is a deck well, that obviously one of us plays, and it is a deck that has not put up a lot of top results lately, although it used to be a very good deck. This was once upon a time maybe arguably the best deck in Legacy, although those days are sadly in the past.
It has been a while since it was the best deck, but it's been good for a while, and I have heard a lot of people whose opinions I respect say that it should be well positioned. So it's kind of, in a lot of ways, the exact opposite of Miracles.
Right.
Miracles is doing very well now. Miracles is blue. Miracles is kind of has nowhere to go but down as far as popularity goes. Not that you shouldn't get on it. It's really right. good right
if
now.
If it gets any better, it's just gonna something's gonna get banned. So
yeah. But yeah. This one is a also Miracles. You know, if you're getting in and you like the idea of Miracles, jump on it. It'll be fun if that's your type of deck, but it's not necessarily the friendliest to new players because of, as we talked about, kind of how many decisions there are and how many nuances there are and how much you have to know your opponent's deck.
Right.
Maverick is, and we'll get to it more later, I think an especially friendly deck for people new to the format.
Yeah.
There have been a lot of people kind of telling me what they've liked to play in Standard or EDH or Modern. And the thing I point them to is, you know, if you like those, you'll probably like Maverick. So yeah. We'll talk about it more as we go. First, what is Maverick?
So this is a, classically, this is a green-white creature deck. Since they printed Deathrite Shaman, it's pretty much always Abzan colors now. So with some amount of black splash, there's nothing resembling a stock list for the deck right now. So sometimes it's mostly green and white with a tiny bit of black. Sometimes it's like more black than green even, and with only a tiny little bit of white. So, but those three colors in some combination.
Yeah, another way that's kind of the opposite of Miracles. Miracles, you know, we kind of told you there was the stock list, kind of almost the exact same cards, just in slightly different, which ones are three ofs and which ones are four ofs.
Right.
This one, you know, we had to search on a lot trying to find a stock list for this, and
right.
we kind of gave up and just, we're going with the Drew's list
right.
of what he plays, because it is one of the most customizable decks,
right?
Because it has lots of pieces that all work in the same direction but do different things. So it's just what you like more and what your local meta will reward you to play more.
Right.
And what you happen to own to a certain extent.
Yeah,
so it's
right.
kind of good.
Sure.
It's a good one that you can keep playing while you're building, because if you don't have card X, Y, or Z, well, there's an almost optimal version that just doesn't run that on purpose. So
right. Almost all of these cards are just good cards, just good creatures, good spells, good lands that can go in other Legacy decks. So to a certain extent, there's not really anything in here that you're going to spend a bunch of money on and then be stuck with playing Maverick because you spent a bunch of money on this card. All of the cards, even if they don't go into whatever the next deck is, you should be able to trade them to somebody else who plays Legacy for other Legacy cards.
Yeah, looking through, I can see, I don't think Scribe Ranger
is probably the only exception to that rule, and Scribe Ranger
and that
is
costs about
maybe
10 cents.
50 cents. Yeah.
Yeah. So we'll get into what those are. So, okay, so it's green, white, black, good stuff?
Pretty much.
I've also heard it called green, white, black, hate bears.
Yep.
What does hate bear mean?
So hate bears, so this is after grizzly bear and various other bear creatures, which are all two mana, two creatures. The hate idea is it's a bear. Some of these actually are not two twos for two, but that's the idea. They're approximately that size, that casting cost. A creature that has some sort of ability that is going to interfere with your opponent's game plan.
Okay, so small to mid-range size creatures, relatively inexpensive, that just have side upsides that are
right.
gonna hose one specific strategy or another.
I mean, the idea is that they are kind of, I don't want to say generic, but like, you know, broad. They spread the hate in a sort of in a somewhat indiscriminate way that interfere with lots of decks. So it's not just like a hate card for one particular matchup.
Well, let's give some examples. What are
right.
the creatures in this deck, starting with the hate bears themselves, if you can?
Right. So, the hate bear in chief is probably Thalia, Guardian of Thraben. She is a 2-mana, 2-1. She's a white Nicolas. She's a legendary human soldier. She has first strike, and she has the ability that makes her so awesome and a staple of several other Legacy decks, is that she says that non-creature spells cost one more to play. So this is a pretty creature heavy list. This doesn't really hurt you that much. You have maybe, about 10 or so non-creature spells in your deck. Your opponents, like Miracles decks, for example, are tending to play many, many more non-creature spells than that. So this tends to tax your opponent's mana base a lot.
Yeah, this is a creature who is a lot better than it sounds. Because you hear just a 2-1 first strike for two. I mean, that's fine. You'd play that in limited, I guess. The fact that it's legendary means you can never have two. It's not going to double up its abilities ever.
Right.
And it's symmetrical, and it's only one extra mana. But think back to everything we've said, how much you're willing to give up to have a spell be one mana instead of two mana.
Right.
Or two mana instead of three mana.
Yeah.
Having each spell they play costs more. This is not the way I first saw it. The way I first saw it was, tap one of their lands every turn.
Right.
And that would be the case if you were playing, say, limited, where people are playing one card per turn.
Right.
No one wants to play one card per turn in Legacy. So
right. They want to play Brainstorm into a removal spell or something, and now they just, even if they have three lands, they can't do that, because those are going to each cost two.
Right, so they can't play, sometimes can't even play two spells a turn.
Right.
They certainly can't play three.
Right.
It cripples some decks. Some decks it just turns off and they don't work until they have to remove it. A lot of time that means that this sucks up removal, their first creature kill spell.
Right.
But the thing is, it will make that creature kill spell cost more. So even then,
it's
kind of like a time walk. It makes them use up maybe an entire turn just to kill it.
Right. So that's Thalia. Then we have one of Gaddock Teague. He is a 2/2. He's a green and a white. He's also legendary, a Kithkin advisor, kind of random creature types. He has some pretty...
Advisor tribal coming up.
Yeah, right. He says non-creature spells with converted mana cost 4 or greater can't be played, and non-creature spells with X in their mana costs can't be played.
What spells cost that much in Legacy? Who would play a big spell in Legacy?
Well, like Terminus.
A lot of people.
Yeah. Like.
For example.
Yeah. So
I recently saw a conversation online about how can Maverick beat Miracles, because Miracles is going to kill all your creatures all the time.
Gaddock
and the answer
Teague,
was basically Gaddock Teague all day long.
Before Miracles started playing Monastery Mentor, Gaddock Teague, if you could protect land Gaddock Teague and protect him, it was almost game over, because every single Miracles win condition, Jace and Entreat, the Angels, both are turned off by Teague. They just can't win the game with him there. And their main way to get rid of him is Terminus. And you can't play that either. So he's pretty great. So then we have... maybe not really almost a hate bear, but we have Mother of Runes. This is a 1/1 for one, a white creature. It says tap, target creature you control gains protection from the color of your choice until end of turn. This is a staple of a lot of white creature decks in Legacy. So the idea is if you can curve something like Mother of Runes turn one into turn two Thalia or Gaddock Teague, your opponent's removal is now pretty much all blanked unless they can cast two on the same turn at instant speed, and now you have a hate bear that can't get killed.
At the very least, they have to spend two kill spells on it. They could try to do one on your turn, and then after they untap, do another one on their turn.
You need an instant, basically.
Pretty much.
At least one instant.
Well, if it's a sorcery, you can do an instant on their turn, and then after you untap, then you can do a sorcery, because then they will have used their Mother of Runes.
I mean, the point is you have to have at least one instant kill spell in your hand in order to make this work.
True, yeah. So it just protects everything and just lets the hate flow.
Yeah. It also has some nifty combat applications as well, but the main thing, again, in the current meta, really feels like is just keeping your hate bears alive.
Okay, yeah, we'll come back to her offensive capabilities. Yeah. But I will say, if she's the one who kind of enables everybody else to hate, I really want an altar of her as the Emperor from Star Wars. That sounds wonderful.
It's flavorfully terrible. Yeah. Mother of Runes and Palpatine. Anyway, whatever.
Come on, that makes you smile. Admit it.
It does. And then want to throw things.
Okay.
Anyway.
Well, and there's another actual hate bear in the main list of this is a Kasali Pride Mage.
Yes.
Tell us about that one.
So that's a 2/2 for two, also a green and a white. Has Exalted, which says whenever a creature you control attacks alone, that creature gets +1/+1 until end of turn. Not a huge deal here. Occasionally a couple extra points of damage over the course of the game. But what it has is you pay a mana and you sacrifice the Pride Mage to destroy target artifact or enchantment.
Yeah. Now, when I saw this, I thought, oh, there are cards that do that, but better. There's creatures that come into play, right, and when they come into play, kill something. Right. And then you get to keep attacking with the creature. This one, if you use it, you have to sacrifice the creature, and then you don't have anybody on the field. I was missing the point of what you're doing in the meantime.
Right.
You can drop this guy in turn two with no artifacts in play, and then just beat face with him while you wait for a target that's worth killing. Right. If you've got one of those enter the battlefield effect creatures, then you have to just keep it in your hand until they play their artifact, right, and then wait until sorcery speed your turn to hopefully be able to kill it, or play it early and don't get the end of the battlefield effect, and then just lose to whatever artifact, right, they play later.
What, and if they play something like Blood Moon, well, you may not be able to play the creature after that. You need to have it on the battlefield beforehand so that you can then get rid of it after they play it.
Yeah, instant speed, cheap removal that beats face in the meantime, yeah, is really,
it's really
good.
Yeah. We also have Deathrite Shaman. He's not a bear, but he's pretty hateful.
He is very hateful. Yeah. Well, and we talked about all the things he hates on. He hates on everything that uses the graveyard, right, which at least indirectly is at least half of, yes, Legacy decks, probably, right, more.
Plus, life gain is relevant against every deck, except where the times where draining their life is relevant. It's, yeah, he's good.
Yeah, you very rarely would ever side him out, for example, because worst case scenario, yeah, he's a mana dork, and he gets, right, you to turn three mana on turn, yeah, two. That's
he's
never
probably
bad.
The best. He may be the best card in the deck. He's, yeah,
he's the best card. He's in the
best,
a lot of decks.
Yeah, he's the best. He's the best creature ever printed, as I've said. So this is a creature deck, and amazingly, water, the best creature ever printed is a four of in here, and he's good.
Surprise!
Controversial statements. That's, we specialize in those here.
Now there's one on here that I never had thought of as a hate bear, but you know, you and I were talking before, and you said you kind of think of him as, yes, a hate bear. Is a dark confidant,
alias Bob.
Yeah, which we talked about him on the Staples episode, I believe.
Did we? I don't think we did. I don't think he's actually cracked the rough 10% threshold that we set.
Oh, well, talk about it now. And if we're repeating ourselves, blame Drew, and you can say complaints right, to MTG Drew
Walton. I like Dark Confidant. He's worth talking about twice anyway. He's a black and a colorless for a 2/1 human wizard. And he says, at the beginning of your upkeep, reveal the top card of your library and put that card into your hand. You lose life equal to its converted mana cost.
That sounds terrible. That's a lot of life over the course of a game. My spells are expensive.
Yeah, well, your spells shouldn't be expensive. This is Legacy.
yeah, you'll notice we talked about hate bears as 2-mana creatures. The curve in this basically goes to 2.
Pretty much. There are, yeah. Some builds will run some slightly more expensive things, but yeah, most pretty much everything is 1 and 2 in here. So this draws you a card basically every turn in exchange for some life. The way I think of this is a hate bear against decks that want to sit back and let the game go long and gradually build up advantage. Because if they try to do that with Dark Confidant in play, you're going to just bury them in card advantage while also incidentally attacking them for 2 damage per turn. This is a hate card against like Miracles. Miracles has to kill this card on sight because they need to build up card advantage against you. And they can't do that if Bob sits there, because they are not pressuring your life total, right, at all. You can just continue to draw cards with him forever. And
Once he draws you 10 cards, you know, the fact that they've been drawing, cantripping once isn't going to help when you've got 17 cards.
Right, they can turn this and wipe out 3
game.
Of your creatures and whatever. You've drawn 3 more cards and you just vomit them back onto the board and you're good.
That's really kind of an interesting way to think about, yeah, him. Just that he is hate bear against Dirtling, right, pretty, right, much.
So this is one of the cards, sidebar momentarily. So there, we talked about how there are different builds of Maverick that splash different amounts of black. There's something called Dark Maverick, which is a very black heavy version. It tends to run 4 Dark Confidant. My build is kind of middle of the road. I like all of the various aspects of Maverick, and I'm probably trying to have it every possible way at once. I don't know if that's best. I mean, it's you get all of the goodies, but then sometimes you have less consistency because I'm not running four of anything. Well, some things, but not as many things as maybe like good deck building. Sometimes you, you just try to go for consistency, and I don't do that. But
you're going for versatility.
I like versatility
on purpose.
This is kind of a toolboxy kind of thing.
We'll get to how it's a toolbox in a little bit, but so Dark Confidant also, I will say, is mandatory. You know, the life loss and everything. I just saw again at the recent Pro Tour on camera somebody lose because they had two Dark Confidants in play, and they just were flipping over two drops and three drops, and they drained themselves to death about one turn away from winning, which was
right.
A
lot of decks, like I said, do run four of this. I only have two in here for that exact reason. I feel like one is fantastic. You like it's one of the best cards to have when you have one. It's almost like he's legendary. You can technically have two, but you really don't want them. Sometimes you chump block with this guy just so he won't kill you.
I definitely did in my one main tournament excursion with elves. I lost, and part of the reason I lost is because I chump blocked. Oh, I traded with a Dark Confidant. And the other person looked surprised when I did it. And about two turns later, I realized why. It's because I probably would have won if I just made them lose four more life. So live and learn.
So we'll finish out the creatures real quick. We're almost there. So there are two copies here of Stoneforge Mystic. We did talk about that because that's one of the best creature threats that we have available to
white
us.
White creatures.
These colors.
Yeah.
There's one.
And also, if you're able to fetch up equipment and they're playing Terminuses, well, still got equipment.
Right.
So.
And yeah, there are reasons why that's particularly good here.
Well, I mean, if you have an equipment, then now every creature you play is kill on sight. Because, you know, a Mother of Runes by themselves is not very intimidating, but a Mother of Runes with some really good equipment
very powerful,
will win the game.
And we have some... Stoneforge is very good here. We don't run four because it's not exactly what we're trying to do, but... we have some nifty tricks with Stoneforge that some of the other Stoneforge decks don't have. So, Scribbranger, which Jamie mentioned earlier, this is a weird creature that I didn't want to play for a long time because I thought it was kind of bad. And it's not great at a lot of the different things that it does, but it does so many things that are good that I ultimately just gave in and I've put it in here. This is a 1/1 flyer for 2 mana. It's a green and a colorless. One of the rare.
That sounds unplayable.
Green
that sounds
creatures.
Unplayable.
It has flash. Which is, okay, nifty, I guess. It has protection from blue, which, okay. And it has an ability
that
it, we'll talk about much more in depth when we go into the elves deck list, which is you can return, it's an activated ability, return a forest you control to its owner's hand, untap target creature. Play this ability only once each turn. So, all right, that's a lot going on there. So one of the things about this, so it's flying, which means that it can block Delvers. It has protection from blue, which means it's very good at blocking Delvers. It also
flash, so it can surprise
a
Delver. It's not going to kill the Delver.
It'll stall them, and this is
going to.
Sometimes this deck has a problem with getting Delvers off the field. It has since it is flying, it also is very good at holding equipment. Sometimes you need to. There's a lot of the equipment we play wants to connect with your opponent specifically in order to work.
Yeah.
And if the ground gets locked up, this is the only flying creature in the deck. So this can be the best thing.
We have alluded before about how, you know, Legacy is so weird and interesting, how sometimes it doesn't matter if you have creatures or not, and sometimes it's really a slugfest. And, you know, a lot of the time, there's only one creature on the field, or there's only one player with creatures, and flying's utterly irrelevant. And then there's some games where having the only creature is what determines who wins the game. And that is not as random as it sounds. When I say that kind of variety, it's more of you and your opponent get to sculpt the game state, and you will play a lot of games that will just play out differently. So that kind of variety is something that I find wonderful. And I think there's only one
more
which left
is,
on your list.
Debatably, certainly one of my top five, maybe not number one, but certainly one of my top five Magic cards of all time, which is Knight of the Reliquary. This is the only 3-drop in the deck, Well, okay, one of the equipments, I guess, is a 3-drop. It's a green, a white, and a colorless for a 2/2 human knight. It gets +1/+1 for each land card in your graveyard. And it has this weird ability, tap it, sacrifice a forest or plains, search your library for a land card, any land card, put it onto the battlefield. You should note that the word tapped does not appear there, and then shuffle your library. So this is weird. This is a weird card. It's way more powerful than I think it seems. Part of this is just that you're going to crack fetches, and this is going to end up being a 4/4, a 5/5. Sometimes I've had this be a 10/10. I've had this be an 11/11. Sometimes it's just huge, just stupid huge for 3 mana.
Yeah. Well, and the thing is, it can come down quicker than you'd think. I bet it's not unusual to have turn one, fetch
Deathrite Shaman.
Deathrite Shaman. Turn two,
exile your opponent's fetch land.
Eat your opponent's. Play a Knight of the Reliquary as a 4/4
on turn 2.
On turn 2. Which, I mean, that's beyond the average turn 2 goif.
Right, yeah.
So that's pretty good.
This deals with goifs pretty well. It does cost one more mana, but it's pretty good at just getting ahead of goifs. But then the searching for land cards thing allows us to do some nifty toolboxy things with our lands, which we have done. And that's also one of the main win conditions of this deck. So, Knight's awesome.
Okay. We'll save the lands for last. So we will have to come back to this one as well. This deck is a pile of good stuff, but it's also a pile of synergies. So I feel like I keep saying, we'll come back to that. We'll come back to that also.
Well, explain why everything is good.
Legacy decks. All right. So let's go on to the artifacts, because we talked about the equipment
artifacts,
for Stoneforge Mystic.
So there are three, maybe there are four artifacts at sea play in these Stoneforge packages. I am not playing a Batterskull. I finally realized that it was always the second best equipment, and so it was always I always searched up something else with Stoneforge Mystic. So I've taken out the Batterskull. I'm trying that for right now, and we're gonna see. It seems wrong, but what we're playing instead is a Sword of Fire and Ice, which is one of the. There's a cycle of these. They cost 3. They cost 2 to equip. The equipped creature gets +2/+2 and protection from 2 different colors. This one is red and blue. And then...
Ooh, fire and ice? They're thematic.
It's almost as if. And then they all have this a trigger that happens whenever the equipped creature deals combat damage to a player. This one draws you a card and deals 2 damage to target creature or player. So... It's just
that
stupid.
Is amazing.
So this gets past a lot of creatures that are, I mean, everything that's either red or blue can't block this. Drawing an extra card per turn is pretty good, I hear. And then extra damage, you can kill creatures, you can just race a little faster. It's just really good all the time. It also it allows your creature to dodge being bounced by Jace. It allows you to dodge Lightning Bolt.
Hey, bro. Nice
right,
delver
yeah,
you
right,
got
kill,
there. It would be a shame if
something
happened
exactly.
to it.
Yeah, you can get rid of your opponent's clock pretty easily in this in race situations, even if they have flying. Yeah, it's this is one of the ways to deal with True Name Nemesis. You can just equip it. Like, True Name Nemesis can't block a pro blue creature. So,
well, deal with is in quotes. You can get past it. It's
still
doing
its thing, but
because you can't. Yeah, you can't hit it with the 2 damage
right,
to kill
no,
it or
no,
anything.
But you can. This deck usually goes a little faster than the True Name decks. And if they've managed to equip a Batterskull to the True Name Nemesis, you have a problem. But that takes a long time to set up. So you should be okay. And even if they have, well, you're drawing cards every turn and hopefully you'll be all right. The other one is Umezawa's Jitte, which, did we talk about this? We talked about this in the stable
list.
Yeah, this is stupid. It's stupid. It's broken. It shouldn't have been printed the way it is. And you should play it, absolutely, because it's way too good not to play if you have Stoneforge in your deck.
And I never thought about that with the Batterskull idea. You know, there are... If you're playing against a deck that's red and blue, you want Sword of Fire and Ice. Absolutely. If they're in both of those colors. If they're in one of those two colors, you probably still want it. You know how we said about 70% of decks are blue, so Sword of Fire and Ice is kind of always a good choice. And the decks that aren't running
you want
that
Jitte.
are usually creature decks, where you really want Jutae, you want something that's going to still trigger in combat, and it's going to just machine gun down.
Almost the only exception is Burn, where Batterskull is almost game over, but Jutae is also almost game over against that deck. So it's, you're not really losing very much by having that instead. So
true, because then it becomes almost unkillable. You can pump it to itself.
It gains you life. It's almost life as necessary. It's like a cheaper to equip Batterskull. So yeah, it's good. So we're also running one enchantment. We'll just get that out of the way, which is Sylvan Library. It's a green and a colorless. They printed this a long time ago, and they would certainly not have worded this the way that they have now. All it has is this weird triggered ability. At the beginning of your draw step, you may draw two additional cards.
In addition to your one normal card. So you're drawing three cards.
You now put these in your hand, although... So, sort of don't. Because you're technically allowed to, but don't. So then you choose two cards in your hand that you drew this turn, which don't have to be those two cards. If for some reason you have drawn additional cards this turn before your draw step, you may also select those for this purpose. Then put two of those extra cards you've drawn this turn back on top of your library, or pay four life for each one you don't put back.
Okay. Yeah. So let's break this down. This is sort of a free brainstorm every turn with some alternate abilities on it. You draw three cards instead of just your one card, and then you put two of them back. Unlike a brainstorm, it has to be two of those three, unless you've been doing some other weird
card
shenanigans. A little bit, yeah. There is also the upside of, you know, if I do that, I'm almost always going to say, you know what? Unless I'm playing Burn, I'll just pay the eight, because... unless these are terrible cards and I have a fetch land, I'm going to just see those same two cards next turn. It is useful to just be looking two cards deep in your library, get the one you want, keep something on top out of discard damage if you want. That's useful. It's more useful just to draw three cards per turn. The thing we were talking about before, don't put it in your hand, rules lawyer nuttiness warning. Plug your ears if you don't want to hear it. Once a card touches the other cards in your hand, it becomes, according to the rules, indistinguishable. Because, you know, you're allowed to shuffle your cards in your hand, you can't tell which one's which. Once a card is indistinguishable to the opponent, to the rules, to the judge, even if they technically, in fact, do know which one it is, if it is indistinguishable according to the rules, then you cannot prove that it is one of the cards you drew that turn. So you cannot put anything back. If you just take those three cards and put them in with the other cards in your hand, you have decided to not put any back and you must pay the eight life. So what you do, you take your hand, you put it down, then you draw three cards, and then decide what you want
to
do with
that. That's the way to do it. Even if you're not playing by the strictest of rules, it's still just politeness to not try to make your opponent think you might be cheating. I mean, don't cheat. You know, play fair. So, and don't look like you're cheating, even if you're not.
So it seems slow. Sylvan Library seems like very slow card, and I'm assuming that, like my deck that sometimes runs it,
you side it out in faster matchups. Good against anything that might be slower than you. Like Miracles, this is basically just draw four cards. If you manage to start gaining some life off of like a Jutae or something, it's pretty fantastic. And it combos brilliantly with Dark Confidant, because you can put something really cheap, like a land, on top of your library, so that when Bob triggers, you just, flip over this Plains, put that in my hand for free, and then draw another card.
Why is it called Bob?
This is one of those cards that somebody designed after they won whatever it was that you used to win to Invitationals. Yeah,
an invitational.
And the guy's name is Bob.
Yep. The original card art had his face on it, and it was strange and wonderful. The new card art is creepy and not wonderful.
We'll have to agree to disagree on, because I have two copies of this, and they're both the new art.
It doesn't have the winner's face on it.
But the art is...
It doesn't have the winner's face. He designed it. He won.
They could have put his face on it. They still could have put his face on it.
They could have made... They could have made him look creepy in profile like that. That would have been fine. He won the right to have his picture on the card. I agree that maybe they should have left his face on it.
However, the new art is better.
Yeah, it's the principle of the thing. And get off my lawn.
Yes. All right. Get off your lawn. Stay on my card. Something like that. Okay. Spells.
Get out of my lawn.
We have some instants and sorceries here.
And get into my car.
You're not singing
with me.
No, I want to talk about. I want to talk about my spells. I'm excited about my spells.
Welcome to Legacy Weapon, where we don't sing. This is actually not the. What is the next card you want to talk about?
So all right, the next card is Green Sun Zenith, which I think I lied about. Knight of the Reliquary. I think I said Deathrite Shaman is the best card in the deck. Actually, probably Green Sun Zenith is the best card in the deck. So this is banned in Modern because it's stupid. Green and X, a sorcery. Search your library for a green creature card with converted mana cost X or less. Point of the battlefield.
We talked about this.
Did we talk about this already in
reference to Dryad Arbor? So I think everybody. So you know how that works.
We referenced it.
Part of the reason why it's so good is because Dryad Arbor is in this deck, spoilers. And we talked about how that's a land creature. So converted mana cost of zero that taps for mana.
Yeah.
That means if you don't have something better to do, your turn one play, Green Sun Zenith becomes a mana elf, effectively. One green mana, go put a summoning sick tapping for mana creature into play. And that's fine. It's useful. That's good.
Right.
But unlike mana dorks that become useless in the late game, this one gets more useful in the late game.
This is really good in the late game. Right. This gets Deathrite Shamans on turn two. It gets Knight of the Reliquary. It gets Kasali Pride Mage. Scrib Ranger.
Here's how good it is.
It gets Gaddock Teague.
It is so good because it is every card in your deck, effectively, for only one mana more. Right. And one mana is significant. But do remember, you have zero mana, one mana, two mana, and three mana creatures. You have something at any mana spot that you want. So that's fine. It is so good that we're running four of them and probably don't side them out, right? Hardly ever.
Despite the fact that your own
Gaddock Teague turns them off.
Right, this is just terrible, hilarious nonbo in here. Is that sometimes you get Gaddock Teague, like you want a Green Sun Zenith for Gaddock Teague, and then shuffles it back in, right? So sometimes you'll have four Green Sun Zeniths in your deck at all times. And then you draw another one and you go, ugh. But it doesn't matter because you have Gaddock Teague on the field.
Especially in the matchups where you want Gaddock Teague, okay, you play him turn two. In the matchups where you want him, it doesn't matter if your turn three, four, five, and six are all Green Sun Zeniths. If he's still in play, you're winning. Yeah.
You can't lose the game.
Or they kill him and then, all right, Green Sun for another one.
Well, that's fine. Now you can play your grid. Right. So, the next four, five, six, seven, eight spells. We have eight more instants and sorceries, and I have no idea what these should be. I have an idea what they should be. I just don't know what the right numbers of them are. Eight more slots. Yeah. So it is, I think, pretty standard to run a couple of copies of Abrupt Decay, which is a really good removal spell for a green and a black. It's an instant. It destroy target non-land permanent with converted mana cost three or less. And Abrupt Decay can't be countered by spells or abilities.
This is really good and better than it sounds because you hear this and you think, okay, well, you're usually probably killing a creature or something and you can't kill the big stuff that you actually care about. Except we're in Legacy, and most of the things you care about cost one or two or three.
Right. Pretty much the only thing you can't kill that you might want to get rid of are a Batterskull and a Jace. Almost literally every other permanent. And lands. Almost literally every other permanent this gets rid of. Man, if that's on the field, you're probably in trouble anyway. And we actually have better ways to get rid of Embercore.
It solves problems.
It solves problems. The other thing that this does, since it can't be countered, you can get past a counterbalance lock. Because you can just blow up the counterbalance.
It is one of the best cards for that matchup. Just because you can kill the counterbalance itself, opening the floodgates for everything else in your hand.
The only problem with this is that it is a green and a black. It does make the mana kind of difficult. I mean, Legacy, it's fine. You've got all these fetches and duels and everything, but if people are playing Wastelands against you, this can be a liability. I have occasionally tried to stretch the mana base in this deck too much to the point where I've drawn abrupt decays and like been holding three of them in my hand and been unable to cast them because I had colorless sources. So it is a limitation. There are costs to this. You do have to make sure that you actually have green and black sources in order to.
If they're wastelanding you, that just means dark Deathrite Shaman has more food. He needs,
which is yeah right. Deathrite Shaman food still might be the best card in the deck.
Next,
it does, yes. So I'm running two of these. You could talk me into three. I wouldn't go as high as four, but two is probably a good number. The rest of these slots, a lot of people run four Swords to Plowshares. I'm only running two because I'm not that scared of most creature decks. But Swords to Plowshares is pretty good.
Did we talk about Swords to Plowshares?
I'm running three.
Okay.
And Miracles. Yeah. I'm running three Thoughtseize, which is the best discard spell.
Which we have not talked about. Well, I think it's the best. One black mana for a sorcery. Most discarded sorcery spells. And if we ever hit an instant speed discard, we'll talk about why. But it's a sorcery, one black mana.
Yeah.
Target opponent, target player, reveals their hand.
You can target yourself with
Thoughtseize. I've done that once in my life. It's very rare.
There are applications.
Reveals their hand, you pick any non-land card from it, they discard it, and you lose two life. So this, again, solves problems. Most other discard spells are either expensive, where they've probably already played the thing you care about, or they're limited. They can only get creatures, or only non-creatures, or only big spells, or only small spells, or something.
Or only small spells, or... Yes,
unless you're playing against lands, this solves problems. The fun thing... I have a lot of time had people counter this. So they lose a card in their hand still, but they're doing it wisely because they're,
so you don't see what's in their hand. They're
protecting something more important. You know, if they've got their combo in their hand and two other cards, they would rather Force of Will losing two cards than letting you take the one you actually want to get rid of. The fun thing though is you then don't lose any life because that's not a cost of the spell. That's an effect.
That's true. Got countered.
So, just another thing, solving problems, targeted problem solving, but more proactive.
Yes. Right. And the thing about this deck is that we don't have Force of Will because we're not playing blue. So we do need early answers to combo decks. A lot of decks are running four Thoughtseize in the sideboard. I have three of them in the main and one at the sideboard at the moment. I've gone as high as four in the main. The thing is, You need quick answers to combos. Gaddock Teague is pretty good. The thing with Gaddock Teague is that a lot of combo decks, most of them actually do need to play a four mana spell in order to win, and Gaddock Teague locks those out. But if they are on the play, they can frequently do it on the second turn, and Teague is too slow. So Thoughtseize gives us some game in game one against those combo decks, while also being just good at taking the best card out of everybody's hand.
You know, unless the game has gone really long in your top decking, which is honestly not that common in my experience in Legacy, where you're in top deck mode.
No.
It's going to take something. And to a certain extent, the later in the game, they're probably holding something good by that point. And last one you have on here is one of my personal favorites, actually, Hymn to Turok.
Yeah. Hymn to Turok. I love this card so much. This is two black for a sorcery.
You said we weren't singing.
The puns, they were strong.
Causing you emotional pain is one of the highlights of my day.
You don't want to hear the Hymn to Turok. It will break your mind. This is sorcery, two black. Target player discards two cards at random. This is by far the best card from Homelands.
Also the most valuable, despite being, I think, a common. By far.
It was a common. This is... The double black, again, can be a little bit tricky in a three-color deck here, but this is really stupid. There's nothing that stops this from hitting lands. You can sometimes cast this on the second turn, and like one of my all-time favorite sequences is turn one, Deathrite Shaman, turn two, Wasteland, and then use their land that you just wasted to help you cast Hymn to Turok in the second turn. And sometimes like they have three lands in their hand, and you blew up the first one with Wasteland, and now they're going to discard the other two to Hymn to Turok.
Oh, that's just beautiful.
Oh, it's so great. So, again, I have no idea what the right number of him to Turok here is. It seems... Sometimes it's terrible, and you just your hand is full of white and green spells, and you just cannot make it work to get a black source quickly enough.
Because you need two blacks,
you need two blacks, right? So yeah, and if your opponent is playing Wastelands and you have green and white spells, you kind of need to get basics, but then you also need to cast all your spells, and it's a conflict. But it's, I mean, sometimes it just wins the game. You just cast this on the second turn, and you just win the game because you got rid of.
Now I want this one altered to be Emperor Palpatine also.
This one maybe shouldn't really be Emperor Palpatine because it's just evil. It's
Senator
wonderful.
Palpatine. Emperor. Wait.
Yeah, we could have one altar be the Emperor and one altar to be the
all
Senator.
Right, we need to do an entire your deck and all altered to Star Wars stuff and pretty much just all hateful things.
All altered to Star Wars. Yeah.
for a mostly white and green deck, your deck's kind of evil.
It kind of is, yeah. Oh man, really, like, everything should just... Really what it should be is everything should be altered to have Jar Jar on it.
Not that evil. No, not that evil.
Yeah.
Gosh, we're not playing Lantern Control. Come on. Before we go on, I want to thank our sponsor. As I mentioned, we are sponsored by CoolStuffInc.com, a very good website for getting all of your cards. They also have other games, which I will admit that I don't get into them, but if any of you are interested, like some of the figurine games, they just have a lot of different things that they cover, other card games as well outside of Magic for those of you who have more time than me and can actually learn more than one card game. We do have a specific sponsor though for just this episode, and this one is another PSA actually. This is about information for the youths. Those of you who might not know what the reserve list is, we've alluded to it on here. And Citizens Against the Reserve List have commissioned this work and they had hired a celebrity to come sing it for you, and unfortunately he was crossing the road and got hit by three different trucks. He hopped half of the way across the road and just the fifth truck just got him. The logs were rough, but the anyway, so I will be doing my best here because we said we don't sing. Fooled
except
you,
what
Drew.
We sang.
Why are there so many cards on the reserve list? What's Wizards trying to hide? Rainbow Ifrit is from Visions. It's not an illusion. Rainbow Ifrit has nothing to hide. They say that we need it, and some choose to believe it. I know they're wrong, wait and see. Someday I'll find it. A Rainbow Ifrit reprint. The grinders, the streamers, and me.
That was beautiful.
Thank Moving on. That. We do have the lands. Let's hit up the lands before we go. We'll try to wrap this up quick because we want to do another two-part. We'll go into strategy and Milligans and everything else next time, but let's try to get through the lands real quick.
Right. Try to get the lands real quick. So the standard mix of duels, basics, and fetches, we're running eight fetches. Four of those are Windswept Heaths. Two of them each are Verdant Catacombs and Marsh Flats. So those are the on-color fetches. We have one each of Bayou, Savannah, and Scrubland. So those are the on-color duels. And one each of Plains, Forest, and Swamp. Because
Wasteland.
Basics. Yeah. Because of Wasteland. We also have four Wastelands because Wasteland.
And because you don't have enough hate in this deck yet.
We don't have enough hate in this deck. For a long time, I was going with no Swamp. And then the him to Turok and things, it kind of became necessary to have a black basic land. So, then we have Dryad Arbor, as mentioned. We have a Caracas. Did we talk about Caracas?
No, we did not. Oh, did we?
Did not talk about Caracas.
Oh, no, yeah,
Caracas
we did. I'm 99% sure. But you can be wrong again and talk
we've
about it.
We've done this, so... Okay. Well, Caracas is a legendary land, taps for a white, and it returns a legend to its owner's hand, legendary creature to its owner's hand. This is how we get rid of Emrakul, is that you can go get this with Knight of the Reliquary.
Yeah, it's kind of nice if your opponent has any legend, and you can just return it every single turn, and you always can tutor for it when you're four of Knight of the Reliquary at instant speed.
Yep, that's why it's important that Knight of the Reliquary brings the land in untapped, because, you can... get it immediately. You can also use it to save your own Thalia and Gaddock Teague from removal, so it makes it even harder to kill those things.
Also kind of nice, you can get your own Gaddock Teague off the field if you really need to green Sun Zenith.
So you can play green Sun Zenith for something else. Yep. Then play it again. Yep. Good times.
Sneaky.
Sneaky. Speaking of the reserve list, Caracas is on there, and yeah, sadness.
We have explained what the reserve list is, right?
It's cards that Wizards has promised that they will never print.
I do promise we will talk about it more later. I kind of assumed that everybody knew. Yeah,
that's basically what it is, though, and it's a thing that is one of the reasons why so many cards in Legacy are so expensive.
Right, because they are old, there's not that many of them, and there will never be more, so they are held to be good investments, and therefore people want them.
Right.
Anyway.
Anyway, so we have a few more. We have a few flex spots for lands too, and these are a matter of personal preference. I am running a silly little combo here.
No, this is almost your not instant win, but sort of instant win.
Sort of instant win. So we have a Thespian Stage and a Dark Depths. So what Dark Depths is a really weird land. It's a legendary snow land. It doesn't have a mana ability. It cannot tap for mana. It enters the battlefield with 10 ice counters on it. Then it has these... You can remove an ice counter for 3 mana. So 30 mana, remove all the ice counters if you want. And when there are no ice counters on it, you sacrifice it. And you get a indestructible, legendary creature token with flying. It's 20/20. So
it doesn't have haste, so it's not instant win. And it doesn't have trample, no. So if they have got flyers, they can...
Lingering Souls tokens or something, yeah.
Maybe they can survive a little while, but a 20/20 flying indestructible is a little hard to get rid of.
Right. Mother of Ruins is also neat here, because you can give it protection from whatever the color of their flyer is. I've won games that way, too. But 30 mana to sink into
seems
that,
a little
that seems kind of bad. Little slow, right? If you're wondering where you've missed the infinite mana combo here, there isn't one.
Wait, if a 5 mana creature is too expensive, I think 30 is too expensive, Drew.
30 seems a bit much, right? Even for a 20/20 flying indestructible, that seems like a little over curve. So this is where Thespian Stage comes in. This does have a mana ability. It taps for a colorless, and it also has an ability where you can pay 2 and tap it, and it becomes a copy of target land. And then gains the copy ability.
So it can copy a different thing the next turn and a different thing the next turn. Right. It can turn into whatever color you need, or your opponent's lands, or Dark Depths. Right.
Or Dark Depths. Okay. And so the nifty thing there is that, so Dark Depths gets the ice counters when it enters the battlefield. And it sacrifices whenever there are no counters on it, for whatever reason. Whether you've, not necessarily just because you've activated the ice counter removal ability 10 times. Just if there are no counters on it, for any reason. So there are several decks in Legacy, actually, that use this as a win condition by trying to remove counters from it. And there are also a couple other ones, most notably lands, that use the Thespian Stage combo to just make Thespian Stage a copy. So now they're both legendary. So the legendary rule triggers, and you put Dark Depths in your
original
graveyard,
real Dark Depths, leaving you with a copy of Dark Depths that has this other ability to copy stuff. But it didn't enter the battlefield as Dark Depths. It didn't have that enter the battlefield triggered ability to add counters. So it's a Dark Depths with 0 counters on it.
Right. So it also goes in your graveyard, and you get the 20/20 flyer.
And since neither Reliquary can search up both of these, you basically, the moment you play Knight of the Reliquary, if you feel like going for it, you've got a 3-turn clock of infinite damage. Well, of 20 damage.
Right. As long as you have at least one forest, one plains, and one other land. Because you can tap a land, float the mana, sacrifice it to Knight of the Reliquary, and then use that mana to help activate Thespian Stage.
And if you cast Knight of the Reliquary, you've got a forest, a plains, and...
You should hopefully have extra... I mean, sometimes they get wastelanded or something, but you should have... Yes, by the time you cast Knight of the Reliquary, 9 times out of 10 at least, you should have the mana available to do this.
I think that's everything in the main board, is that right?
That is the main board. There's one other land I am running, and this is another matter of personal preference here. I'm running a Taiga because I have some red spells in the sideboard that are kind of janky, personal preference-y, silly things. But I also think there's some fun in surprising people. Nobody expects the fourth color out of your three color deck.
Well, I will say, and there's a reason they don't expect that. It's because it's usually a bad idea.
There are a couple of reasons they don't expect it. At least one of these is that it might be a bad idea.
For the record, there is a deck called the Spanish Inquisition, and nobody expects it. Partially because it's not the best, but
it's not actually a great deck. So the idea here is that we have one Taiga, but all of our six of our eight fetches can get it. We also, you can get it off of Knight of the Reliquary, and we have Deathrite Shamans that can also tap for red. So we actually have a surprising number of ways to get mana of different colors. So it's easier than it looks to splash an extra color here. I wouldn't advise playing like Lightning Bolts in here or anything, but for sideboard matches against people who do not have Wastelands, it could be a pretty helpful answer to combo. Okay. Surprise! What we have the sideboard cards are Pyroblast and Red Elemental Blast. The idea is to give us some extra help against combo. I might be running more scared of combo than I actually need to be.
Yeah, I mean the answer to combo for you, I really think is Thoughtseize. But anyway,
I think it's probably Thoughtseize, but I'm not allowed to run like 12 copies of that though. So
all right, well let's wrap it up. Let's get a banned card of the day.
Yeah, banned card of the day. So this is a Wasteland deck. There's a card that's is better than Wasteland. It's called Strip Mine. It's like Wasteland except it doesn't have that word, that pesky little word non-basic on it.
Yeah.
Just tap for mana or tap sag destroy a land. So if Wasteland is like one of the top five cards, like five best cards in Legacy. Strip Mine
is better than Wasteland.
It's probably too good.
Now, given that, and given the fact that anybody looking at the two who knows how to play Magic can see which one's the better card,
right.
Here's a legit PSA. Because in Oath of the Gatewatch, the current standard set, they are having Expeditions, fancy foil full art of a variety of old lands. One is Wasteland, and one is Strip Mine.
This is true.
If you open Strip Mine, and your opponent opens Wasteland, trading those two is not going to be the way that you think it is. Because you'll look at it and you'll think, oh, you know, I got a Wasteland and he has a Strip Mine. His is so much better than mine. His can hit forests.
It's strictly better.
I want that one. Well, yes, except that since it's banned in, you know, everything that's important, it's not very valuable because
Wastelands are 40, 50, 60 bucks, depending on condition and such.
Strip mines are about $5. I think they went up to $5 recently.
Yeah, right.
Now I wonder which one there's more of, because Strip Mine was reprinted more times, but in older sets. Wasteland was only in Tempest. It was an uncommon.
And it's also been like, it's been like three Judge promos and an Expedition now.
And it's still like $70, just because everybody really needs them.
Yeah. Everybody needs
it. All right.
Yeah.
Last thing before we close out, I do want to say a thank you to a few of our listeners who gave us iTunes reviews. It made me feel kind of special.
Yeah.
How can people reach you, Drew?
I'm at mtgdrewwalton@gmail.com.
I am Jamie7Keller on Twitter and on gmail.com. You can catch the show at MTG Legacy Weapon on Twitter or legacyweaponpodcast@gmail.com. Be sure to check in next time. We will be finishing up the deck tech. And until then, remember, preparation is the best legacy weapon. Thank you.
Yeah, sorry. Part of the not wanting to edit is me actually getting my sponsor down ahead of time.
Okay, fair enough. It's probably something we should do in general, maybe, but...